Shea Sannon. Along with Brendan Schiller, we represent the appellant defendant Miguel Bolivar in this case. As your honors may be aware, this matter was a drug conspiracy charge that went to trial before Judge Zagel. Two defendants went to trial, Mr. Miguel Bolivar and Erica Musgraves. Ms. Musgraves was found not guilty at trial. Mr. Bolivar was convicted in count one of a drug conspiracy and count two of possession with the intent to distribute a very small quantity of drugs. During the trial and the issues that we've raised before this court, we believe that the trial court erred in three specific ways in evidentiary rulings. The three specific evidentiary rulings we believe that Judge Zagel erred in, which caused each independently caused prejudice to Mr. Bolivar, but when looked at the totality of the circumstances of all three errors, completely prejudiced Mr. Bolivar from getting a fair trial. Those three areas are the post-trial statement made some 3 months after the conspiracy was charged. Originally, three defendants were charged with the conspiracy, and 3 months later, Mr. Bolivar was added to the conspiracy and charged in the same conduct as his cousin, his daughter, and Erica Musgraves, who was found not guilty. 3 months after the fact, after the original defendants had been charged,
that's his nephew.
He was the uncle, and Lupe Perez was the nephew, and his daughter was also charged.
Not a cousin.
I apologize, cousin. Michelle and Lupe.
Michelle is a cousin of
Lupe Perez. Yeah. Correct, Your Honor.
Excuse me, this is Judge Rovner. Did Perez have any other uncles?
Well, the testimony at trial showed that out of respect to other people.
Oh, I understand that it's a term that might be used to refer to older men out of respect, whether or not they are actually uncles. But what I was wondering is, why is it not a reasonable inference that Perez meant Bolivar when he referred to his uncles? In other words, did he have any other uncles or other uncles involved in the drug trade?
Not that came out in evidence, Judge. Mr. Perez did have other uncles, but not that were discussed during the trial that was before Judge Zagel. My client, Mr. Bolivar, has sisters who are married who would be also Mr. Perez's uncles.
Mm-hmm.
However, as a familial relationship, there was no evidence presented before the court that anybody else was a blood uncle to Mr. Perez.
And he was the only uncle that was living with Perez.
He would stay with Perez on
staying
occasion. There was testimony to show that on occasion he would live with Mr. Perez. But as the telephone conversation showed in the beginning, specifically as to the tapes where the government could not identify who the person was, Mr. Perez was calling that person LTO or uncle also. And we were able to show in the defense case that the phone number that was being called was the call to a person who was involved with Claudia, who the original 5 kilos then came from for the transaction to take place, that Mr. Bolivar was not even at. The evidence shows that after a certain point, there is no contact between Mr. Perez and Mr. Bolivar, and that the evidence was clear at the trial that the narcotics that were eventually seized by the agents came from an individual by Claudia. That part of the trial was not contested. The conversations between Mr. Perez and this unknown person also relate back to a phone number that goes to Claudia. The only conversation that can relate Miguel Bolivar to even come remotely close to connecting him with Mr. Perez is the conversation that Mr. Bolivar has in person with Mr. Gaddy, who is the confidential informant.
Well, didn't he sort of sink himself when he talked to the CI and told them he had supplied his last good cocaine as the sample the CI had received the previous day?
Judge Rover, I missed the beginning of your comment. I apologize. I didn't catch the beginning.
I'm sorry. Didn't he sort of sink himself when he talked to the confidential informant and, said, the last good cocaine that I supplied was the sample that you got yesterday?
Well, that's not the exact conversation. There is a conversation about a good sample, but he says he doesn't have any good ones. There's also a conversation where Bolivar tells this confidential informant that he doesn't have anything to give him and that his cousin doesn't have anything either. Bolivar says, I'd give you something if I had it, but I don't have it. That's the conversation between Gaddy and Mr. Bolivar during the meeting that they had. However, there's no other conversations between Perez, Gaddy, and Bolivar to connect Mr. Bolivar to the conspiracy. Is that the question? It's a little hard to hear, Judge Rover.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about this. Well, just go on. Go on.
Okay.
Well, the red light is on here.
The red light is on. Just
to, oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Just to sum up before Mr. Schiller responds to the government's argument, is the one big thing I want to draw this court's attention to is the Santiago proffer that came up. And Judge Zagel's comment on allowing co-conspirator statements is, and this can be found at transcript page 23, the jury can decide whether the co-conspirator statements are offered at, are admissible because of the government's proof of a conspiracy of the statements being made. When Judge Zagel made that ruling, he abrogated his role in deciding whether or not there was sufficient evidence of a conspiracy to even allow these conversations in. And by doing so, he committed error. And for that reason alone, we'd ask this court to reverse the jury finding.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Schiller? I'm sorry, how are we arguing this? I've got two names down here. Okay, he's doing the rebuttal? Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know whether how you were arguing. Okay. Mr. Bindi?
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to start with the last point first, Your Honors. Judge Zagel did make the findings that were necessary to admit the co-conspirator statements himself prior to trial. He found that there was sufficient evidence of a conspiracy, and that there was sufficient evidence that the defendant was a member of the conspiracy, and that the statements, some more clearly than others, were in furtherance of the conspiracy. I think the fairest reading of the transcript of his admission of the evidence is that some of the co-conspirator statements were a little weak in terms of their evidentiary value. And it would be up to the jury to determine the weight of the evidence at the end of the case. I'd also like to clear out a little bit of underbrush here. There are a number of issues raised in the defense brief that all sort of coalesce around the sufficiency of the evidence. There are arguments that the indictment was constructively amended, and that the evidence proved a conspiracy other than the one that was charged. So there's a fatal variance. This all revolves around the sufficiency of the evidence, because it's the defendant's contention that the evidence proved, if anything, as to him, only that he attempted or talked about selling the 4 kilos of poor quality cocaine, and that's a transaction that never happened. He says that the evidence is insufficient to prove the conspiracy that was charged. And since there was evidence of another charge against him, that must be what the jury convicted him of. We, of course, disagree with that. We think that the evidence showed the conspiracy that was charged. As Judge Zagel explained in the pretrial evidentiary ruling, the evidence appears to show that Bolivar and Perez, his nephew, were partners in this cocaine business that they had. It also appears that the CI was primarily the client of Perez. And so Perez was the one who was primarily dealing with this person. However, because they had a problem with inventory at the time they were trying to close this deal, Bolivar stepped in and helped out his partner, tried to keep the customer on the line, keep him interested in buying from them. That's what the evidence showed.
There was evidence about this inordinate number of telephone calls that were made between Perez and a number that you said is identified. Bolivar's phone number, like 125 or something
like that,
during a 6-day period. Were there other periods of time when there were telephone account numbers calls being made of that same magnitude?
Well, the period of time that you're talking about, I believe, is
October 10th
through the 16th. And then there's like almost no contact between the I think the 17th and the 20th. As far as phone traffic outside of that that period, there was no evidence.
So this was an unusually high number of calls during this critical 6-day.
I really don't have a baseline to say that it's an unusually high number of calls.
Why I asked you if there were other periods when there were a lot of calls. I mean, that seems like a lot of telephone calls to me.
It certainly would be for me.
127 in a 6-day period.
Yeah. It strikes me that that's a high number, too. But again, I have no point of comparison to say that this was an unusual amount of traffic for these people. But what we do have to prove the charged conspiracy, I think, is the recording of the in-person conversation that the CI had with Bolivar. And they're talking about possibly transacting this 4 kilos that are really poor quality, and they dismiss that idea. And then the CI says to Mr. Bolivar, he says, he showed me a picture last night, and this is in reference to the sample that was delivered by Michelle Bolivar the previous evening at approximately 8:30. He says, he showed me the picture last night, and Bolivar says, yeah, but the picture he showed you, this is the last one I have. This is the good one. This is the last one I have. He also says, I'm going to try and find you something. Take me up to the north side. I got to see a friend of mine. He's waiting for me on the north side. And then the CI says, he's wasting my time. He's got me thinking you all have something. And Bolivar says, I told him, don't tell you that. Don't tell that guy that. And he's trying to find you something. So what this conversation shows is that both Perez and Bolivar are sort of beating the bushes trying to come up with the kind of quantity that the CI is interested in. They're both trying to find supply to close this deal. So the evidence, I think, is sufficient to the extent that it's even debatable, to the extent that there is even a question as to which interpretation of the evidence is the most reasonable, given the standard of review, the conviction should be affirmed.
What's your best evidence that Perez ever lived with Bolivar?
Perez's own statements.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thanks. You're out of time, but... So he's got 5 minutes. Okay, that's what I was wanted to make sure. All right, you got 5 minutes? All right. You're what? You're out of time. Okay, you're out of time. I'm almost out of time, so you go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's Brendan Schiller doing the rebuttal that we reserved. A few quick issues, and let me say my biggest disappointment this morning is I can't be in the presence of Judge Rovner.
No.
The point about the phone calls, there were a large number of phone calls between the 10th and 16th. We don't have any records any other time except for the 10th and 20th, so we don't know whether or not this was unusual. What we do know is that the conspiracy actually charged in terms of the drug deal that actually went down was the drug deal that went down on the 20th, involving all these phone calls between Claudia and Musgraves and Perez and Michelle that all occurred between the 17th and the 20th, and we don't have a single phone call involving Mr. Bolivar, Miguel Bolivar, between any of those individuals from the 17th to the 20th. It seems to me that the fact that you have a high number of phone calls between the 10th and the 16th, no phone calls between the 17th and the 20th, and you have exactly what the government just ended its statement with, that you have Bolivar independently looking for drugs for this guy at the same time Perez is independently looking for drugs for this time, shows our case, it shows that there's a fatal variance. Perez is the one who found the drugs, and he's the one who cut the deal, and the conversation stopped when he found the drugs, and the deal went about its process with the CI between the 17th and the 20th. And the real issue here and is the government's constant attempt to conflate and to to say that the standard review is always the same for fatal variance, constructive amendment, and insufficiency of the evidence, and to use that standard review for insufficiency of evidence and throw it over and apply it to constructive amendment and fatal variance. They have every reason to do that. It makes their argument easier. But as your honors know, that's not the case. And in particular, while the language is very similar to fatal variance and insufficiency of the evidence, the issue is subtly different. And when it comes to the question of constructive amendment, it's very different. And the problem we have here is Judge Zagel's ruling that essentially I'm going to let everything in. I'm going to let all the co-conspirator statements in because they were made. I'm going to let this post-arrest statement that's 3 months old in that says nothing about the conspiracy, just that I know about drug dealing. I'm going to let all this 404B evidence in. I'm going to let all this hearsay evidence in. I'm going to let the jury sort it out. Well, if there wasn't a possibility that you had two distinct conspiracies, then maybe that's no big deal. That's harmless error. But that's clearly a constructive amendment here when there's clearly two distinct interpretations. There's clearly evidence on both sides. And you say, in this, what's a very complex area of law already when it comes to multiple conspiracies, I'm going to confuse the jury even more by laying all this evidence in, and then I'm going to let them decide. That's the problem in this case. If he hadn't let all those co-conspiracy statements in, if he hadn't let all those statements, those phone calls that, and those conversations between the 17th and 20th in, that Miguel Bolivar had nothing to do with, if he hadn't let in this post-arrest statement, then maybe we're just stuck with the fatal variance argument, which is very similar to insufficiency of the evidence. And maybe we don't have a close call. Or if there wasn't such a possibility of such a distinct interpretation on just the one phone conversation that they have, and it was clearly just one overall conspiracy, then maybe it isn't an issue that you have all this other ancillary evidence in. But combined, you have a constructive amendment, and that is a different standard of review than insufficiency of the evidence or a fatal variance. That is a strict question of whether or not all that evidence could have led the jury to convict based solely on his conversation with the CI, even if that had nothing to do with the conspiracy. And because the judge just threw everything in there and let them do that, that's a distinct possibility in this case. And that's the real issue for your honors to decide. Thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks. Thanks to both counsel, all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.